Hello, and welcome to the DebtWired podcast. I'm your host, Johannes Koch, senior reporter at DebtWire. We're finally back this year recording the podcast for you after a brief hiatus. I look forward to a great year ahead of high-value interviews and a broad range of topics from across the DebtWire universe. To kick us off today, I am pleased to have Dominik Spanier on the podcast. Dominik heads up Lincoln International's cross-border debt advisor activities in the German-speaking region and has over 25 years of experience in corporate and structured finance. He has advised large corporates, mid-cap, privately held companies, and sponsors on a range of acquisition and sell-side financings, refinancings, and restructurings. Hi, Dominik. Thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Hi, Johannes. Thank you for the nice intro and happy to be here.
We're going to be talking about the year ahead for private debt financing in particular and have a discussion on what to expect. Just to caveat this for our listeners, a lot of this can probably be seen for Europe as a whole, but given Dominik's speciality is the German-speaking region, assume a slightly narrower lens. We'll close out the chat with some insight into how debt advisory practices are developing in the region. So let's jump right in, Dominik, and start with the macroeconomic backdrop. We have several wars on several fronts, a U.S. presidential election coming up, and some expectation on the interest rate environment changing. And that'll differ between the U.S. and Europe. That's just to name a few things. Given that, what are the macroeconomic developments you are most concerned about or that come up in discussions most frequently? What's on people's minds?
Thanks. That's a very good question. And I wish I had a crystal ball here, but you already pointed in the right direction. I think there may be two main themes which we are currently watching very closely. The one, obviously, is expectations on the central banks to lower the interest rates. I think the market in the last quarter already anticipated that the central banks will lower their interest rates considerably over the next few months. And if you look at the Euribor curves, you already see that the market is expecting a steep decline in interest costs. So just to give you an example, I think we're almost already 1.5% below the Euribor swap rates 6 or 7 months ago. The other main factor is obviously the macroeconomic situations. We have currently two wars going on. And in addition to that, the Red Sea channel now becoming a fairly threat to the overall European supply chain. And if we speak to some of our clients and even customers, they already indicated that they are struggling to get the necessary supply in time. And that's maybe something we hadn't on our agenda 2 or 3 months ago. So clearly, the overall macroeconomic environment is still a bit unstable. However, as we've seen last year, deals still can be done and financing is available. So all over all, I'm not too pessimistic and I'm quite looking forward to the new year.
Yeah, funny you mentioned the Red Sea channel. And I think that harks back to when the Suez Canal was blocked. That caused some ripples throughout the world as well. How do you expect this to impact deal flow in the months ahead? I mean, our data shows that, you know, buyout activity has reached a 10-year low. So will the buyout market continue to languish or do you expect to see it pick up again? I mean, what do you think?
But the best view I can take is what we see currently happening in our backlog, also from our M&A colleagues. And I have to say, we see quite a strong backlog. We have been invited to a number of pitches. We see an increasing activity of private equity funds, at least considering an exit, also driven by the need to show investors a return on their investments. And there's a lot of liquidity in the market. So I think the market doesn't look that grim in terms of deal activity. We also see that a lot of portfolio companies are still actively looking for add-on acquisitions, which is also a driver on M&A activity in the market. But clearly, there's a lower activity than it was maybe in 2020, 2021. But I'm not too pessimistic about deal activity, just referring to what we have in our backlog and the work we're currently doing.
So yeah, that across the board is sort of the feedback I'm getting as well. Given this, you know, financiers have always been looking at more robust and defensive sectors such as software with high recurring revenues or in healthcare more broadly and medtech more specifically, where demographic developments allow for some planning. Will these remain hot button sectors? And which other sectors do you think might come into play this year?
I think TMT, healthcare, MedTech, that's the obvious ones. I also would add business services. We also see a very strong momentum on the business services side, B2B business models, where valuations still hold up and where lenders are quite eager to provide financing. Other sectors, maybe consumer. When I mean consumer, I mean discretionary spending, B2C models. They might be less in favor than the other sectors. But I think the trend will continue with the sectors you just mentioned also in 2024.
I've found that lenders often, especially direct lenders, tend to stay away from consumer. But do you think there'll be a need for some of them to step in? Because there is deal flow in the sector, obviously.
Yeah, and I also think there are good companies in that sector. And I think it really depends on the business model. And maybe it takes some more preparation time to really display the USPs of such companies to potential investors and lenders. But I'm completely convinced that they're a very good asset in that sector. What obviously is difficult is the typical brick and mortar business models or one product companies, things like that. But as we've seen in the past, there are business models in consumer which can be very, very compelling. For instance, when you have something which is safety wear, that's maybe something which is also of interest. Things which are driven from some regulatory environment, for instance. So I think I would encourage lenders and investors to take a more closer look on also on consumer assets and maybe find a hidden gem in those transactions to become.
Thanks for mentioning valuations, because that's where my next question was going. Looking at the top two sectors of your choice, I mean, TMT, healthcare, or maybe take even business services, where are valuations trending? You know, will buyers and sellers find common ground? I think there was still quite a mismatch going into the last quarter of last year.
Yes and no. I think what we have seen is that valuations, they pretty much hold up in TMT and also in business services and MedTech. Obviously, there was sometimes a mismatch, but we haven't seen a steep decline, maybe because debt also in TMT or healthcare didn't play such a high role when it comes down to valuation. For instance, if you have a valuation of 15 or 16 times for a business, whether you put in 4 times or 5 times debt into that business doesn't really move the needle, if you know what I'm saying. Yeah. That's completely different when you go down to industrials or other sectors where you have maybe valuations of 6 times or 7 times, and then a 3 times, 4 times leverage plays a pivotal role when it comes down to valuation. So I think the mismatch in valuation was more prominent in those more neglected sectors than it was on the hot sectors in 2023.
Leverage on average, I think, has trended down, and you'd probably agree with that. But don't you think pricing, where we've come from, also needs to find a more of an equilibrium at a lower level than where we have been at?
Yeah, I think the decrease in valuation obviously was driven by the increase of the cost of debt and the cash flow available to service the debt. That's one point. But we are already, when it comes down to margin, we've seen that margins have reduced over the past 12 months. I think that's also mainly driven by competition for good assets. So when you have a very good asset, then you can fetch very attractive terms and conditions in your financing. When an asset is more complicated or more hairy, as we call it, then you might end up at the upper end of the pricing. At the end, what drives pricing down is if you have a very good competition amongst a number of lenders who are competing for the same asset. And that obviously helps you in negotiating your terms. But in overall, we see a decline of margins over the past few months, which is encouraging for financing as well.
Yeah, and I think is the expectation there that margins will come down maybe half a turn more as we go forward? I mean, even if, let's say, interest rates come down as well, despite that?
We haven't seen that trend yet. I think when it comes down to unitranche pricing from debt funds, we're probably at a level now where we see pricing for very good assets between 6 to 650 basis points, which I think this isn't going down much further. On the bank financing, I could imagine that bank financing, where we observe currently margins around 400 to 450 basis points, that there is room that those margins can can be lowered over the next couple of months by maybe 25 to 50 basis points.
Okay, since we've talked about margins, maybe just really quickly on terms. There were some creative deal structuring and terms last year, given the need to finance some of the higher quality assets that were out there and some of the hairier ones. Do you think there might be a pullback on some of those frothier terms?
When it comes down to what have we seen, I think one trend we have seen, to give you an example, is that some lenders, in particular from the debt funds, they allowed their borrowers to pick some part of their interest costs. And I think that's a feature that's probably going to stay because it's quite a neat feature for borrowers. And I don't expect this to go away. We've seen, in terms of structuring, we've seen new products like Holdco Pick, Second Lien suddenly emerged on a number of transactions, which I haven't seen for a couple of years back. So I think those type of financing structures will probably stay. If obviously interest rates are coming down as predicted, margins are coming down, then there's less of a need for those more creative structures in the future.
That's really interesting. In the German market in particular, before I move on to the second part, just to get a lay of the land on what debt advisors are doing, we've seen debt funds come into support sort of bank finance deals, which weren't able to grow with the companies that they supported. Do you think that'll continue, you know, bringing in debt funds by other means, via a TLC tranche or something along those lines? And that's a feature that's particular to the German market.
Yeah, we've seen TLC or second lien structures. And I think that's probably also something which is going to stay because lenders have now made experience with those kind of additional financing. And it offers a new way of structuring deals where maybe the capacity of the traditional banks is maxed out. And for instance, when you would like to do an add-on acquisition or to raise financing for further growth or capex, bringing in a direct lender with an additional tranche is quite an interesting feature to achieve those financings.
Yeah, so I think that's going to continue potentially as well, given there will be companies that will need to grow and our bank club supported. So yeah, let's just quickly turn to the debt advisory market in particular. So what challenges will debt advisors likely face this year? The LBO market was and still is to some extent overheated, and there's an overall lower deal flow, right? So where does one look for opportunities to advise?
I think the challenge is probably when you speak to your clients, it's first and foremost is probably managing expectations, because many borrowers are still used to the old financing environment where lenders were coming in offering very high multiples, loose conditions, and that has changed. So that you have also realign expectations a bit. That's maybe one challenge. The other challenge is that preparing a process now takes longer than it took 12 or 18 months before. So you have to do a lot of preparation, very detailed due diligence. Lenders, they're really expecting a thorough financial and commercial due diligence reports, detailed answers on questions. And that's something you have to manage, and you have also to get through the process. And I think that's also the one of the core advisory tasks we have to provide to our clients here.
So less cut and paste for you, more work for you in essence, especially drawing up potential lender educations in the future. But what are some of the newish advisory opportunities that could be, or that debt advisors in general could be looking to open up, grabbing a share of the corporate markets? Is that the holy grail for debt advisory?
It's a bit kind of the holy grail for debt advisory. Doing debt advisory for corporates is very interesting, and I think it's a great market. It's our job to convince management CFOs from the value add of a debt advisor work. But I think that's the overall sentiment towards debt advisor is changing to the positive here, because in the past CFOs saw one of their main task or own task is to raise finance and to negotiate with lenders, and so bringing in a debt advisor always was considered as a nice to have, but what's really is the value added. But I think that perception has changed, because lenders, or your existing relationship lenders, are maybe less less open for new financings. They ask for more securities or higher interest rates. And then the overall product range of debt product range has changed. So bringing in a debt advisor with a clear view, maybe also open new options, that's something we can bring to the table. And when what we see is that perception is changing amongst corporates, and corporates are increasingly using debt advisor service. And that's also what we see here in our day-to-day work, that the increase of mandates with corporates compared to mandates with sponsors has increased considerably.
Well, if the LBO market doesn't pick up again and there's fewer opportunities there, you know where to turn and where the split will come from in the future. Thank you, Dominic. That was a very insightful chat. So thank you again.
Thank you.
And thank you also to our audience. And please help us by liking, sharing, and subscribing to the podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Auf Wiedersehen. Bye.